Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today, we have Kevin Meng, and he is an SEO content writing expert. He even has a course on SEO content writing, and he has 30% off his course. If you go down the description, there's a link there for it, plus a link to his Facebook group and all sorts of stuff there. But we dive into writing really good review content and not just the typical stuff you see on Google that is surface level covering features. We dive into some of the principles behind how he writes his reviews and how he structures them as well. So you can take this advice and implement it straight away within your own content. And then we dive into, I guess, a little more off the beaten track regarding content writing. We go into his course, how he developed it, how he's selling it, Facebook group stuff, collecting emails, and we go down more of a marketing rabbit hole with that, and also how we got started within content writing, and how if you're looking to do some freelancing within content writing or make a career out of it, how he got into it and how you can do the same. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today, we have Kevin Meng. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for coming on. I think it'll be an interesting one today and very valuable for the listeners because obviously, we're all going through various Google updates and various review updates and all sorts of stuff around content. And obviously, well, with your expertise, it would be nice to dive into a lot of content writing stuff. But do you want to maybe provide a brief background about yourself before we dive in?
Yeah, sure. My name is Kevin Meng. I've been a content writer for about 8 years, 9 years or so. I've created a ton of content and also a content training course on how to write product reviews and engage in web content. I've been an instructor at Internet Marketing Gold Academy. I've got some videos in Matt Diggity's Affiliate Lab, Authority Hacker. I've got a Facebook group. Yeah, I got a bunch of content related.
Dude, so you're big time. You're big time then.
I wouldn't say big time, but the videos are pretty. The videos are pretty short in all the different places, so it's not big time yet, but hopefully soon.
Okay, well, you obviously know something about content writing if you're teaching content writing stuff on these courses. So I think something interesting to dive in, but I wanted to ask you first, I guess, over the years, this might be a more general question, but how has your content, I guess, writing evolved over those years? Has it changed? Maybe as you've become a better writer, but has it changed also based on what's been happening with, I guess, Google and the Google updates?
Yeah, I think it's changed a lot. In the beginning, I think like pretty much everybody else in all different walks of life, when you get started, right, you're just kind of seeing what's out there already and mimicking it as best you can and kind of, you know, in a way, just kind of trying to find your way to fit in. You know, I was mostly writing SEO blogs for really, really cheap when I got started, you know, off of Upwork or cold emailing people, things like that. So, you know, looking back, my stuff was really not that good, but it didn't really have to be, you know, that was a long time ago, different worlds with SEO altogether. So yeah, as it's, as the years have gone by, I think it's, I've really kind of transitioned more into like writing, I would say more like sales copy, right? Where my product reviews, they kind of look more, they look more almost like sales pages, right? It's, I wouldn't say it's changed so much from like an SEO side, except for that, you know, I use like Surfer and things like that now. But from just like the writing itself, it's more of like, it's punchier, it's more powerful. And I definitely use more like copywriting concepts, you know, it's, that's just something that's taken me a long time to learn though. It was not natural in the beginning. Like I said, if I look back on what I did a long time ago, it's cringeworthy, man. It's
Dude, I feel you on the copywriting side. I've done a couple of copywriting courses and kind of dove into that world to write my own sales pages and stuff. And yeah, it's a skill in itself. And I think it's definitely not natural for anyone to write like that. The idea of using different power words and the way things are structured, it's so different. And the skill's invaluable, of course. But I guess, how are you implementing that within your review articles? Is it more using that kind of language to explain the product, or is the formatting of the page also almost like a sales copy page, like how it's kind of laid out?
I think it's a lot of it is like the format, but I think a lot of it is also like just thinking about like copywriting concepts, like emotions, like you said, power words, focusing on the benefits instead of the features, but also kind of tapping into things like addressing objections, you know, or kind of, you know, let's say future pacing. I don't really like all these like fancy terms. I think they're all window dressing, but yeah, you know, like, you know, future pacing would be something like kind of putting the reader into a world where they're using the product and what their life would be like and things like that. More just things that I learned when I was, when people were teaching me about sales pages and I was getting, you know, copywriting people to give me feedback and stuff. They were teaching me these different concepts, and it just kind of happened naturally where I was doing sales pages and I was also writing product reviews, right? And then I kind of realized that, hey, if somebody Googles like best hiking boots for a beginner, they're ready to buy, right? So you actually are essentially showing them a sales page, right? You're not really showing them a product review, right? So you need to kind of use the same concepts, actually.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot here with that best hiking boots for beginners. What kind of examples of language would you use in a review post like that? Like what kind of things would you be putting down in there?
So rather than, I don't know if it's like language specifically, like I don't think it would be like a specific word or anything, but I think it would be something more like thinking about like the benefits of the boot and like the pain points and stuff like that. So being like, okay, this has 50% more padding, and for you that means hiking all day without pain, hiking without blisters, without sore feet, without sore ankles, or without, you know, complaining to everybody else that you're done for the day and want to go home. You know, that kind of switching my mode of thinking, because I used to, like, when I first started writing, I would do things like, oh, this boot is great because it's brown and it's made of leather and it's, you know, like just different features, because I didn't know what to say, you know, and that's kind of like what everything else was. And I think another like important thing that I learned along the way was like, people really need you to prove the claims that you say. You know, imagine you want to buy like $1,000 product and you come to the page and it just says, oh, this product is really nice and you'll like it a lot. You know, it just doesn't work that way, right? Like you need to explain the benefit. You need to back it up with the proof of it, like with detail, you know, key purchasing details, why it's so good. So with the hiking boot, it would be like, it's, you know, it's got double the comfort because it's made of this material and this material, here's the way this material works. Here's the science behind it. Here's why it's better than competitors, that kind of stuff, that extra really helpful, like depth and explanation, because I think like a lot of SEO content is really, most SEOs, they just want to rank, right? They just want to get the keywords in. They just want to get the keywords in there. And I understand, right? Ranking is the most important thing. You know, you can have the best review, and if it's not ranking, then nobody's going to buy it. So, so most SEOs kind of want to rank. So the content is a little bit surface level, you know, they just kind of get something up there quickly. Most content writers, they don't really know the copywriting principles that they need. to sell the product. So they just say the surface level stuff. It's more comfortable because it's made of Gore-Tex. That's it. You know, but yeah. how comfortable is it? What would that comfort feel like? What can I do with that comfort? What is Gore-Tex made out of? How is it better than other things? I don't even know if it is. I'm pulling this out of the air. I don't know if Gore-Tex is any good or not, but that kind of stuff. So, you know, adding that extra depth and adding that extra, I would say it's like visualization for them almost. Like, what would it look like? How does it feel? Like that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's what I would put into a pitch like that, if that's helpful.
Yeah, for sure. I like to think of it almost like, so adding so what to the end of whatever you write, like pros and cons can be, can be kind of like a short sentence about a feature, but you know, so what does that mean for the reader regarding that pro and con?
It's really true, man. So I think it's even better. I think to think like, so what and how, you know, so what and how, and how does it compare to others? Because they're probably looking at other products too. You know, you might want to say like, oh, so you'll have extra comfort on the trail all day. And it's actually better than this type of shoe or this type of shoe because of this reason. You know, you have to, you know, levels and levels and levels. So yeah, it's more details, more levels, more proof, more comparisons, all that stuff.
Yeah, nice. And before I get into kind of the review article structure, because I think most people kind of do a similar structure. Some people might do something a little different. But before going down that road, regarding tone of voice when writing, how would someone develop a tone of voice, and how do they know, I guess, what kind of tone of voice they should use when writing? Obviously, that's again another skill to learn. But it's obviously you can have a friendly style, or you can have more informative. There's a whole bunch out there.
Yeah, I think with tone, it kind of starts with the number one thing with writing in a good tone is just realizing that you should be sounding unique. Like that's number one, because like I said, when everybody first starts writing, what do? They see what else is out there and they just start sounding like that. And, you know, most content is either AI generated now, it's written by, you know, God knows who, or, you know, it's really not that good. There is plenty of good stuff out there. It's just, you know, the internet is still mostly not good content. So realizing that, and, you know, just as an aside, like I hire a lot of writers and I noticed that even, you know, really good ones, they tend to still kind of sound more or less like everybody else, or more or less like they would write an academic paper in school, right? Because that's kind of where we all learn. That's where we all learn to write, you know? And that's how I sounded, you know? My first article sounded exactly like my high school essays, you know? Because that's just all I knew. So yeah, I would start with just understanding that you really should be finding your own unique voice. And that would be number one. Number two, you really need to think of the topic at hand. You know, if you're writing about hiking boots, you got to sound like somebody who's actually hiked before. You know, if you're writing about, you know, the law, you should sound like a lawyer. If you're writing about, you know, if you're running some blog like College Info Geek, where you're just, you know, talking to college age kids about whatever they're interested in, like how to stop wasting time, how to be more productive. With people like that, you need to be more fun and outlandish and use profanity and say weird things just to keep them entertained. It's all different, you know, depending on different issues. So, go ahead.
Yeah, that's good. I guess the follow-up question to that is, how do you find the right balance between using things like maybe like funny analogies and synonyms and all that kind of stuff, maybe within an informative content? I know some good examples are like general fitness magazines. They'll write a lot of, I guess you could say, analogies or just funny little quirks within the copy. The article sucks. The information sucks, but that is the fitness magazine. They kind of just appeal to the masses. But then how would you, so for me, because I'm in that area, how would I bring some of that into my writing without turning into that kind of fitness magazine style, if that makes sense? I don't know if that made sense at all. I'm kind of just
I get what you mean.
Spitballing in my mind.
Like you don't want to sound like you're
like, don't want to be like Men's Health, you know? Right? Yeah. And don't want to be like another Men's Health copy, whereas I have my own style, my own information that I'm like trying to portray.
Wow, yeah, that's a good question. I never really thought about it, because for me it's just like I do think that over time I've developed it's taken me a while, but I've developed my own tone, and I'm kind of like outlandish. Like I tend to actually be like more ridiculous than anything else. Like cause I think that keeps people, I think it keeps people engaged. And I also think that people think it's refreshing, you know, to read somebody who sounds like a human and is not trying to like, you know, be super dry or sell them too hard. It's different for all different niches though.
I think that
if you know like the core copywriting concepts, or you know, just think about, start with the title of your article, and if it's like five tips for running further, you know, like a science-backed guide to running further and increasing endurance, and just know that you have to provide as much value as possible. Like maybe type out notes, like make an outline and be like, okay, I want to give them this tip and I want to give them that tip and that tip, you know. And then once you've filled that in and you've got like a lot of meat in there, then kind of like reread it and be like, okay, is this a little bit too dry? Is this a little bit too factual? Is it sounding too Wikipedia-ish? And then from there, you can maybe add in one joke or one quip or something like that per paragraph or per section or something like that. I definitely think you should be giving more real palpable value than you should be joking around, for sure.
Yeah.
I think that as long as it's like a healthy ratio, I think as long as it's like 70, 30 or 80, 20, I would say that like the content that I write is probably like 70, 30 or maybe like 75, 25 of like meat and like real helpful advice. And then the rest would be like stories, jokes, metaphors, you know, hypothetical situations. I like to write a lot of that stuff because it helps me stay creative too. It gets my juices flowing. I don't like to sit there and think I'm writing a Wikipedia article. Although, I mean, maybe that would be helpful at times. I really like to joke around. I really like to joke around. I use a lot of memes too. Memes are great. Swear words. I mean, people love profanity, especially like in the online marketing niche, you know, so that's always fun. I hope I answered the question. I did just.
No, you did. That was really good. The swear word one's interesting. And same with the humor. The humor as well is also an interesting topic, because there's lots of people that will say don't use humor or don't swear within your articles for whatever reason. Obviously, you've got a different take on that. I guess it's probably niche dependent as well.
Yeah, it would definitely be niche dependent. If you're like something serious, like, you know, medical or legal or whatever, probably you want to keep it a little closer to the vest, you know. But I think like most web content is not that serious, you know. Like I read a lot of, I'll read a lot of web content about like, you know, like top five productivity apps, you know, and then the content is just super, super serious and drab. You know? Just like, you need to do is to take yourself to the next level. Of, you know, it's like, all right, dude, relax. It's a 99-cent app about the productivity. So,
it's David Goggins on the other end.
I think in general, a more relaxed kind of conversational tone with everyday words that we would use. And like, I like to use a lot of kind of like asking questions inside of my content. Like, you know, if you're going from section to section, you can say something like, oh, you know what my favorite part about this thing is? Or do you want to hear my favorite part about this? And then, you know, going from there, I call it the question and answer game. It's something that I usually try to teach to people. Or like, oh, hey, you want to hear the best part? Or I might switch ideas in the middle of a paragraph and be like, I have something awesome I want to tell you, but just wait 1 second. Let's cover this thing first. You know, I promise, just give me 5 minutes. Like almost as if I'm really chatting to
like
the
talking
person,
to them.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, almost like a, and I mean, maybe it's not great for all niches. It is kind of weird, but I've definitely gotten some good feedback on it. People like it. Keeps them on their toes.
Interesting. Okay, I'm going to have to start playing around with some of that too, but Regarding research as well, because some people aren't in niches that they're familiar with, and it sounds like you write for a bunch of different niches, and it sounds like as well you're not just researching the product, you're researching the audience as well, because you're kind of directing the copy towards them. So how are you doing that?
All different ways. Recently, I really haven't been writing. I used to write in all different niches. Recently, I've just been writing about like online marketing, and from there just kind of doing writer training, recruiting, you know, training teams, optimizing articles and things like that. But back when I was researching different niches, it was mostly like first, YouTube is number one. Absolutely, it's the best thing that's ever happened to copywriters, because you know, you can just put in your keywords and then boom, you've got a video of like a real human being who's really in the niche, and you can hear the words they use, how they talk. You know, I think fitness has probably got to be the best one, right? You know, you can hear all these like fitness influencers talking to you about the exercises and, you know, diet and things like that. You can learn the lingo, see how their tone of voice is, some of the sentences that they use when they're talking. I think that's a gold mine. I would check the comments as well, because you'll hear like the pain points that people have, you know, like, oh, my shoulder hurts because when I'm doing curls, you know, because maybe my form's not good. Do you know how to address that? And, you know kind of what to write about and how to talk about it. But yeah, from there, I would definitely use Reddit. I always use Reddit to see, you know, I mean, never trust a single thing you read on Reddit ever. But, like, yeah. you know, like you can at least see like how people are talking about the niche. A good way to do it, like with products, is go to Amazon and see what people in the reviews are saying. Like, not the product copy, because the product copy is probably just AI generated at this point, or is written by somebody that doesn't know what they're doing. Amazon copywriting is pretty rough these days, but the comments, you know, the reviews, some of them are legit. You can hear how like real people are talking about the products. You know, I remember working for this kitchenware company, and I was using Amazon reviews to write the copy for their homepage. And some people were, you know, saying like, oh, I bought this for my wife, and you know, she's a cook from, you know, her family comes from Italy, and they said it's the best thing that they've ever cooked with ever in their lives. And I thought, oh, that's a great angle to take on it, you know. And I kind of just ran with that, and that's how I wrote the story for the homepage. So Amazon definitely helps, Reddit, YouTube, industry websites, Facebook groups. And just keep a document. Just keep like a language like swipe file. Almost. I keep a language swipe file in every niche I work in. If I see something I think is interesting, just copy paste inside of it. It's not organized because I'm the most disorganized person. But it kind of works, actually. I don't know how. I really don't know how, but it does.
Yeah, that's actually something I learned. So I actually purchased John Benson's copywriting course. A little while ago now. That was one of the tactics he talked about, with finding essentially the language within that niche. And you're basically having other people write the copy for you based on their answers. So searching like within forums, yeah. I don't know, weight loss issues or weight loss problems or frustrations. And then people will be writing their frustrations out in these forums. And a lot of it, as you mentioned, turns into a story, the exact language they're using, you can use, because that's the language, that's the people you're targeting. So they're using that language that you want to use to target them, things like that.
It's a great way to do it, for sure.
Yeah.
Great
way. It's still not easy. It still takes time.
No, it's definitely not easy, man. All of that, all of the language you find has to be like an inspiration. You know, you can't just copy paste it in. It's not going to work. You have to use it as like, you know, use it as inspiration, get the brain cooking, and, you know, kind of see which way you want to take it. But forums are great. YouTube is great. There was one other place that I was going to recommend that I kind of lost it.
It'll come back to me
tonight when I'm sleeping. I'll wake up and
send it over message. But I guess the other thing is the actual structure of the review articles. So how are you structuring or formatting an article, say, for an individual product review, and then for like a roundup?
So you mean like the individual product review itself, or the whole roundup review?
Both separately.
Okay. I have a pretty strict way that I format a review. I even have it all templated out. Like, I have an entire template for it that I use to train other teams with, because, you know, long-winded response here, but I find that like writers, if you just say, hey, write me a review about this, you really don't know what's going to come out on the other side. It's like you're throwing caution to the wind. Like, even if they're a good writer, I've seen a lot of great writers really kind of, you know, really struggle to format it properly, and all the products will look different, and the copy will wander into places that I didn't even know existed before. So it's like, it's good to kind of give them a man, I'm telling you, I had this guy who's actually a really good writer. And he's like a really experienced fisherman. And he was writing about a fishing reel. And I was really expecting a great review because he really knows his stuff, you know. And the review actually just ended up being almost like stream of consciousness story about his trip to a lake with very little mention of the product. And I just remember, like, I messaged him. I'm like, man, what happened here? Like, you just told me a story about your day at the lake, which was a great story. I mean, it was really, really nice story to read, but the product was not mentioned, you know? So it's like, anyways, that's when I was like, all right, you're following the template and let's just follow the template. So, I always start out each review, every review. So for example, if you have product number one, product number one is the Amazing Hiking Boot 10,000. That's always going to start out with a synopsis of what the product is, who it's for, and what makes it special. What is the unique selling point of this article? It's almost like a thesis of the review itself. You know, you're kind of giving the review like a direction. You don't want to just say, oh, the boot is great. I really like this. I really like this. I really like this. I really like this. That's not gonna work. There needs to be like a flow, you know, there needs to be a structure. So start out with like a paragraph or two. What is this product? What does it do? Who is it best for? And what makes it special? What makes it better than other things? You know, like you really want to say like, the Beginner Hiking Boot 10,000 is the best beginner hiking boot. Because it's, you know, it's super cheap and it's just good enough for normal terrain. You know, it doesn't work on rugged terrains or anything, but it's perfect for hikes in small hills and mountains, and it fits snugly. And then you can say something like, you know, it's ideal for, we said that already, but the unique selling point could be something like, you know, it's made of the most comfortable materials. And that's going to help you because as a beginner, you know, your ankles and your feet aren't strong enough yet. You might twist an ankle or something. So you kind of want to say like, what's unique about it, the main benefit of it, right? And then from there, your next goal is you've told the reader all of the information that they need to make a purchasing decision, right? You've told them, okay, I know what this thing is. I know what it does. I know it's perfect for me. And now you kind of have to give them proof. Prove to them that what you just said is true. So if you're telling them that this is the best for beginners because it's so comfortable and you're not going to twist an ankle and you're not going to get blisters. Now the next section, that's where you prove to them that what you just said is true with real, whatever science or data or whatever the features. It's made of Gore-Tex. It's super comfortable. It's got double the padding. It's the back heel is padded, so you're not going to get a blister, that kind of thing. You know, go into all the proof. And then from there, share personal experience. So you have synopsis with all the key purchasing information, then you have proof, and then you have personal experience. And then from there, you go into what I call addressing objections or kind of pushing back a little bit. Then you can go into like maybe a few negatives that way you look more, you know, impartial, right? You could be like, just keep in mind, this is like a beginner boot. And if you think you're taking this to Everest Base Camp, that's not happening. Your feet are going to freeze and you're going to die. So don't do that. that kind of thing, you know. So sorry, that was a little dark, but that's just what came out. So yeah, that's kind of like the basic structure that I teach: synopsis, proof, experience, push back a little bit, and then sum it up with a call to action like, hey, if this sounds like you and you need a beginner book, buy this one. Like that's kind of like the basic structure. It changes, of course.
Because how does that change then if it's a full roundup? So, for example, I have individual reviews and say a roundup review of, let's say, hiking boots. So I have hiking boot 10,000 as review, and then I have best hiking boots, and that's like a roundup of all different ones. How much of the information do you put into their main roundup? Because obviously, if you put the whole individual review in the main roundup, then you've got like a 1,000-word article for every single boot, and that becomes a huge, huge piece.
Yeah. I know what you mean. So I think that... like the roundup with like the, you know, let's say five smaller reviews, you have five products, right? You're putting in like a smaller review. I still would try to hit each of those points though. You don't want to go into like super, super in depth, but you can still write say 250, 300, or, you know, maybe 400 words, depending on what the, you know, the word count goal is or what your budget is. I would still try to hit all of those main points. The difference with like a single product review, that might be 1,000 words or 2,000 words or whatever, is you're going to have all of that information with more detail. And then also you're going to have other, sections like, what is this product? Why do I like this product? Why do I not like this product? You might have 300 or 400 words about your experience with the product. You might have, you might have an individual section like, what is the internet saying about this product? You might have a buying guide, you know, so there are a lot more, there's a lot more depth and details going into that type of review. Whereas like the roundup review is just the most important surface level purchasing information with not as many key details. Yeah.
I think that's actually, you mentioned about the sections and the individual review of my experiences with that. I very rarely see reviews with those sections in them. In fact, I don't think I really ever do. And I think that's an easy way for someone listening, to differentiate, at least differentiate themselves from, I guess, from what's already out there. But I guess the hard thing is, obviously, there's a barrier to entry if you haven't used the product or you're not in that niche day to day, for example, you haven't used it. So how would you tackle that in that situation?
Yeah, in that case, you're going to really have to put more time into research. If you're using the product, you don't even really need to research, right? It's right there for you to figure it out. I use a lot of different marketing software. So when I write a marketing software review, for example, a course platform like Teachable or Kartra or ThriveCart, I don't really even need to do research because I've used it enough that I know. Whereas, if it's like a hiking boot or a fishing rod that I've never seen in my entire life, I might spend an entire day researching the article. So, to overcome that barrier to entry, you either need to find somebody who's used it and pick their brain and do a ton of research on Amazon and forums and YouTube and things like that.
Fair enough. And you mentioned that you write reviews on marketing software. Is that for your own site or is that for other sites?
It's for another site. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. And I actually wanted to dive
in. For my own site.
Yeah. No, carry on.
I was just saying, it's basically just for my main client. It's also a really good friend of mine. So I would say I'm like the head writer for that site. It's not really like a super official fancy title or anything. It's just I write the content, but that's pretty much the only site that I write for now, because I've been kind of too busy with making training videos and training writing teams. I'm trying to transition more into that. So honestly, I hate writing, man. It's a bitch, isn't it? Like you're just like sitting on there all day, burning your brain and writing about hiking boots and fishing rods and don't get me wrong, I did it for a long time and I really loved it for a long time. I love writing. It's just after like 6 or 7 years, you kind of think it's like, all right, I need to pivot a little bit here and figure something else out,
Yeah, for sure. And there might be people listening to this who maybe want to go down a bit of the freelance writing route just for maybe side income. How did you get started in that?
Yeah, man, I used to be an English teacher in Prague in the Czech Republic. And I was always kind of like, I always wrote in school. Like I used to write essays for kids and stuff, like other students in the class. I used to make some money doing that. And I used to do some like writing tutoring. I went to college for a little while before dropping out, and I did some help with tutoring writing. But I didn't know how to make any money with it. So I went out to Europe to be a teacher. I wasn't really happy with it. I didn't really like teaching too much. It's not a job for me, man. I'm not good with student, like teaching in a classroom, that kind of thing. It's just not
good here.
So I remember that I just Googled, like, I got to find a way to make money with writing. So I just, how to make money writing online. And I found Location Rebel. So this was like 2014. I found locationrebel.com, which I think is still going. And there was an article about writing SEO articles. So I just started learning about SEO on YouTube. And then I started cold emailing SEO companies in the New York area, because I'm from Connecticut, which is like pretty close to the city. So there are obviously a ton of SEO companies operating in New York, right? So I finally got a client. I got one client and he gave me like enough work for me to quit most of my classes. So I just started cold emailing. And after like 50 cold emails, I got a couple of responses, and then, you know, one client ended up getting back to me a couple weeks later, and he gave me enough work that I quit altogether after that.
Damn, okay. That's a little success story. Yeah, nice. That's awesome. Did you have to send like samples of your work within those cold emails?
I sent links to my samples. So I had a portfolio. I used like Journo portfolio, if you ever that site. It was like a free creatives portfolio thing for like writers and, you know, artists or whatever. So I sent links to it, and I sent links to my samples, and I also gave everybody one free trial article. I was like, I'm sure you get a million of these emails every single day. I know you're not just going to trust me right off, so I'll write one article for free. If you like it, hire me to do the rest, you know, hire me for however many to meet. So yeah, a few people accepted, and after the trial, they, you know, one or two happened to like it. So I got a lot of work that way. Yeah.
How does someone looking to get into this differentiate themselves from the AI content? I think we've talked a lot about different principles already, but maybe you've got a little more to add to that too.
Well, I think that AI is obviously really cool because it does a lot of work for really cheap and it never complains, right? I think that's great. but it's not really solving the problem, right? Like, you know, a few years ago, SEOs had less bad content, right? And now they have a lot more bad content. So if anything, there's more work than ever for a good writer, you know, like, so anybody who wants to get into freelance writing, don't be discouraged, because AI content is not good. Like,
no, holy shit, it's so bad.
It's so bad. Yeah. But it's amazing what it can do. You know, if a human edits it, it's amazing what it can do, right? You know, but you still need an editor. You still need somebody who knows how to optimize it, somebody who knows how to change the tone, add in all the emotions and benefits, the humor, the memes, everything, right? So I would say if you want to differentiate yourself now, if you're breaking into things, you know, show people, just, you know, make a Loom video of you editing AI content, you know, choose a niche, something you like to do. I don't care if it's hiking or if it's, you know, do whatever you want. I don't care. And create some AI generated articles and then optimize those articles to show clients that you're capable of. Look, I can change the intro. Look, I changed the tone here. I identified an issue with your prompts. Here's how you would fix the prompt. Here's how you would add in some humor. Here's how you would fix the robotic tone of the AI. And I definitely would start with that, you know, and I would definitely focus on optimizing like your social profiles, you know, putting out on Facebook. You can even start a Facebook group if you want, but you can put on your profile like, hey, you know, I'm a content writer. Just don't do every content writer I see has this, like, I'm a professional seasoned copywriting magician that's going to make you $1 million. Like, it's so spammy, you know, like that might've been cool 10 years ago on the internet, but it's just doesn't really work today. And for me, if like a content writer, you know, gives me their application and they say all that kind of cringy, super salesy stuff, I immediately like, don't trust them, you know, just be super straightforward and professional and be honest. You know, if you're like, if you're an entry-level copywriter, you know, don't try to tell me you're an expert or a magician or any of these stupid words, right? Just be like, hey, I'm just breaking into the business. I've got some skills, but I'm willing to work for cheap and learn on the job, and, you know, I'll help any way I can. You know, just be straightforward and try to keep it, you know, light and casual, you know, and post on your Facebook about how you optimize content and show some case studies, and you'll get work for sure, because everybody needs good writers. Actually, if you want to break into the business and you're good, message me, because
there we go.
I could probably use your help. Yeah, how about
that? Perfect. There you go. Call to action for anyone out there willing to take the leap of faith. Is it worth someone to specialize in a niche as a content writer, or does that limit your work too much?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you don't want to like pigeonhole yourself too much, you don't want to be like, I only write about this and nothing else. But I definitely would. Okay, so let me start over. I think you should be able to write on anything, and if somebody offers you work in a niche that maybe you're not comfortable with, you could still take it and try to get better at it, and, you know, if the money is worth it. But you definitely want to have like one specialty that's like your bread and butter. For me, it was always just naturally writing about SEO for people I knew, because I was in just lucky enough to be in Chiang Mai around people that needed a writer. So I got work pretty quickly from friends of mine who had SEO and online marketing companies. So I kind of just fell into the writing about online marketing. So I wrote for a few like SEO company blogs, not like, you know, not their SEO clients, but the company itself, their main blog. I did a lot of that. I wrote for like a CRO company. I wrote for, you know, my friend's SEO blog and things like that. So that was always just kind of my niche. That's where I made most of my like monthly income. And then if other work came along, I would take it. So long story short, it's good to have a specialty that you can kind of write about easily and confidently, but I would be open to any type of work if it comes along.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And I guess because you have a course as well within, I guess, SEO content, right? How did you validate that concept? Or what made you decide to make the course to know there was enough demand to sell it?
I think, that's kind of really what was preventing me from making the course for so long. I always had this kind of like doubt where I was like, if I make this course, it might take me a long time and nobody's going to buy it, you know? But I happened to know, like, just being in Chiang Mai was super helpful. Just kind of my daily experience too with the SEO world. It's like, oh wow, most of this content is actually not that good, you know. So I think that, you know, and I had a lot of people be, you know, asking me like, hey, how can we write better content? Which resources do you recommend to write better SEO content? And frankly, at that time, there weren't that many. All the big SEO sites online, all the blogs and stuff, were just talking about SEO itself, right? How to rank, how to do keyword research, how to do link building. And then when they were saying things like SEO content, what they were really referring to was the SEO structure of the article, the H1s and the keyword density. There was nothing about how to actually write, you know. So I was after that, I was considering to make a course, and I still wasn't sure because I didn't think people would buy it. And then Chiang Mai 2018, I think, was the SEO conference, and I was just talking to people at the conference, being like, I have this, you know, this structure for a course, and people were like, okay, make it, I'll buy it. I was like, oh, I guess that's
easy.
I guess that settles it. I really wasn't expecting it either. I really wasn't.
Wow. Yeah, that's an easy proof of concept then. But how are you selling it now? Because obviously at the beginning it was word of mouth. Are you driving traffic to your site or anything like that through any different strategies?
It's mostly through affiliates, through my Facebook group, through other Facebook groups, and other people's courses. So like I said, I have some small training materials in the lab, in Authority Hacker, in Internet Marketing Gold, I kind of have like a decent sized footprint now in other areas, you know. So, and I also like, I help the group with writing if they ever need help. And this kind of gives me more visibility in their groups. And I have a link to my course in my Facebook profile. So when people see like, oh, this guy, Kevin, I guess he kind of knows what he's talking about a little bit. Let me click his face here on Facebook, and they go to my, you know, profile. They see the link. And so I think a lot's coming from that. A lot's coming from affiliates. I do like guest posts, you know, like in some things like Empire Flippers and SEO Butler and places like that. So just also had a lot of help from people that were friends of mine in the SEO industry. So that was, without them, it wouldn't have ever happened, you know, because I wouldn't have been able to get off the ground. So people were kind of, you know, helping me getting the word around, letting me put posts on their sites and stuff. So yeah, long story short, it's Facebook groups, different courses. I teach in a lot of different communities, like a lot of different online communities. So people just kind of know me as a content teacher, and they hear about the course, so they go to my site that way. I don't do any paid ads yet. I've never done a single one. That's the next step. That's the next step.
Nice. Yeah. And I know that's a bitch to get into too, because I've tried.
It is.
And I can't even set up my damn tracking properly, man. So if anyone's listening to this and knows how to set up tracking properly and stuff for PPC and stuff, please hit me up. Cause that's the hardest part of PPC, I swear.
Yeah. I kind of like have nightmares about running ads, and then people come to my course and then they don't buy it. And now, and now I'm wasting money on ads, and I'm also getting like bad feedback, you know, and be like, am I doing something wrong here? I guess like the proper thing to do is create like a legit funnel where, you know, we have a lead magnet, like a webinar or something like that, or, you know, an ebook, and we kind of pre-qualify the traffic and then, you know, get them to buy something for $10 and then upsell them, you know, something like that. Then I build an email list. If anybody has an email list.
there's plenty out there. There's plenty out there.
I'm sure there are. Please DM me. I'm looking for one.
Nice. And it's funny, because you talk about Facebook groups and it's probably not talked about enough. It's one of the, I guess it's an, if you don't have a blog or your blog is starting, it's probably one of the easier ways to start growing an audience. Facebook pushes it organically. But how did you start growing it, and how big is it now?
And it's only about 1,000 people now, but I do kind of restrict pretty heavily, like people who can get in. You know, I'm not saying it's like a super elite community thing, you know, but it's like, if somebody is just like, if they want to get in and they're like, oh, I'm trying to learn about SEO, it's like, okay, sorry, this isn't really for you, you know, like this is about, I have an SEO site and my content is not converting. How do I make this content convert? You know, or I have an SEO company and I want to hire and train writers. How do I do that? You know, it's that kind of group. It's not really like, I still get a lot of people, you know, requesting like, hey, I'm trying to learn SEO or I'm trying to learn content writing basics. It's like, well, you know, the group really is not for that. They wouldn't get much help from it. And they wouldn't participate, which is a big issue too. You know, the more that people participate, the better signals it sends to Facebook, the more it boosts you up. You know, so if I have a lot of people in there who are not participating, it's not good. It's not good for any of us. So, So I got that off the ground basically by just kind of, again, like leveraging, you know, the people that I knew and also the groups that I was already in.
Yeah.
And then from there, I also had all my current students who are in my course. I have them in email. So I blasted out a bunch of emails like, hey, join this group, and, you know, let people know to join this group. So I got a bunch of people that way as well.
Nice. So it's a combination of, I guess, customers and non-customers within that one group.
Yeah, so previous customers from the course and also just other groups from around the web about SEO and content writing. Actually, so Facebook allows you to invite Facebook friends via groups that you have in common. So I was able to add in a ton of different groups, like, you know, the Affiliate Lab, Authority Hacker, CRO Junkies, Affiliate SEO Master, all the SEO groups that I'm active in. And it gave me a list of like 1,500 people that were in those groups as well that I was friends with, so I was able to reach out to them directly.
Nice.
That was huge in the beginning as well. From here, I don't really know what I'm gonna do. I guess I think it's mostly going to be like appearances, you know, on podcasts like this, or you know, doing AMAs in other Facebook groups. A lot of Facebook groups do that, so you can reach out to the admins and be like, hey, I want to do an AMA. I have all this, you know, I have some expertise. I'll share it with everybody for free. Just allow me to drop this link. So I've got a few of those scheduled for next month. So hopefully that brings in some people. Yeah.
Have you thought about collecting emails through group leads in your group? And then that way, when people join your Facebook group. So Mark's talked about this a lot. Mark's talked about this a lot in the live stream, and I use it as well for one of our groups. So basically, it automatically, you have a, when they join the group, they have questions they answer. And then you say, you know, if you want to join the newsletter, or do you want this lead magnet, whatever it is, enter your email here and enter their email. And then instead of approving them through Facebook, group leads like gives you another button and you custom approve them. And then it basically uses API to send them straight to your autoresponder. And then you build your email list through the Facebook group automatically.
Oh man, that's such a good idea. Why didn't I just think of
it? Do it, man. It's $97 a year. Yeah. $97 a year. It's cheap as shit. And then you just start clicking emails.
And it connects into what? It connects into like MailChimp or whatever tool.
Yep, whatever you want to use, basically. So we had it connected to GetResponse now with MailerLite. So we just have it connected to MailerLite. You can connect it to Google Sheets if you want to. And then you just basically just approve everyone every day. And then it just puts them into whichever, subscriber list or group you've created in your marketing thing, and you can just, if you want, create your automatic campaign, promote the course, blah blah, because you know at least they're interested because they're joining your group.
Right. Oh man, that's a great idea. What's the name of it?
Yeah.
Group leads.
Yeah. I've also found that Facebook emails are super highly engaged with emails. That the open rates are like better than people that opt in from the website, at least from my experience, from using it. I mean, we get like, our email list isn't huge, but we get like 50% open rates mainly from people who have signed up through the group. Yeah, so it's like, it's an interesting one. That's definitely worth doing. Just because it's, I mean, you're getting the traffic there anyway, so you might as well take advantage.
Yeah, might as well, man. That's such a good idea. I wish I thought of that before. What if I have like a bunch of people already? Can I, is there a way I can kind of like get them?
Yeah, you
can
just,
should I just post in the group and be like, give me your emails?
Or you could just post the, your opt-in page. If you just create a squeeze page and then just have that connected up.
That's an awesome idea, man. Thanks.
Yeah, should you? No, all good. Yeah. And then, what have you thought about doing a private community for the people who have bought your course?
Yes, I have, but I have, but it doesn't really seem like. First, I have like four or five different things I'm working on right now that are like pretty, that are like taking priority over that. But
yeah,
it's not the best idea, I think, for a course like mine, because so many people are buying my course just to give it to either their writers or giving it to editors or managers. And a lot of these people are kind of disconnected from me, and they're also like kind of transient. Like the writers get it and they don't finish it, and then they move along and they don't respond to it. You know, with a course like mine, you really have to like kind of crack the whip and be like, get them to finish it, you know, like make sure, you know, like get them to really, really, really finish it, finish the quizzes, get it all in their head. And if you don't, then a lot of people aren't going to do it, you know? And so I tried to have like a Facebook group, and there just wasn't that much engagement, like with the private Facebook group, like because most people were just buying it and giving it to their teams, and the teams weren't joining. You know, there was just too much of a disconnect, and so the new like more public group is better, but. I definitely want to do a copywriting community for sure, but not just for course, not just for like students, you know, like I definitely want to do like a copywriting community for the, let's say the public. Right. But, that would probably be something for next year.
Yeah. I wonder if you could also maybe upsell like, almost like one-on-one copywriting coaching within that as well, within your group, or to at least the people that have bought your course high ticket.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's why I started the group. Yeah. Oh, do you think I want to help people? Jeez, come on, man.
No, I'm just about the money.
Yeah, of course, man. I did get a few one-on-one coaching clients right off the bat from the group. It's been pretty quiet the last month or two, but it's definitely a great way to get one-on-one coaching clients for sure. But I think Facebook groups are the absolute best way to get that. Especially like if I post something like, hey, here's a case study of how I help someone. And then, you know, somebody will DM me like, and be like, oh, I have that same problem. Show me what to do. You know? So,
yeah,
it's great. Yeah. I love Facebook groups. I wish I had started mine 3-4 years ago instead of, you know, last year.
That one-on-one service stuff is slept on within the space. Cause obviously people are looking to make that kind of passive or semi-passive income through ads, a few hundred dollars a month kind of thing as they get started. But if you have the expertise and skills in some area and you go down that road, man, the amount of money people are making in those spaces and different niches with the high ticket stuff blows my mind. And the effort required is literally less than building your site. When you're depending on the niche, like some of the stuff I've seen, I'm like, dude, that's like a couple of minutes a day. If that,
copywriting is, you know, especially like product reviews, affiliate reviews and stuff, a lot of the issues are very similar, you know. So a lot of people will come to me and be like, hey, what's wrong with my reviews? And it's really usually the same four or five things, you know. So I've got it down to a pretty standardized you know, science. I still like to get on the, you know, to get on a video call and talk to people and get to know people. That's just my personality. I do like to get to know the people I work with. But if I really wanted to, I could probably just create like a series of documentation and be like, hey, like here are your problems and your fixes, and just send it to them in an email or into a, you know, put the files into Google Drive, and it wouldn't take me any work at all. I do like to be more like, you know, one-to-one, like more touch points, but it wouldn't take me that much work at all to fix their problems, I think.
Yeah, dude, because you could scale that. Because if you had those templates, they have the templates. You still call with them and stuff like that to kind of go through things. But yeah, they have the templates and then you charge X amount, but you take on a few more. Dude. Right.
Yeah.
That's a nice living just doing that.
That's the dream, right? That's the dream. Wake up and talk on Zoom for like 2 hours and then I don't know, chill for the rest of the day, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, I think I've pretty much covered everything in this podcast. We went down the rabbit hole of all sorts of stuff. But if people want to find you, Kevin, and maybe check out your course and check out what you're doing online, where can they do that?
Yeah, I think the best way to reach me is on Facebook at Kevin Meng. You can also look for Kevin Meng's SEO copywriting group, or you can check out my course, Web Copy Masterclass. Maybe I can leave a link somewhere for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much it, I would say, though. The best place to get me is Facebook, for sure.
Perfect. All right, and we'll link all that up in the description, too, for everyone. But thanks for coming on, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
Oh, man, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun, actually. I wasn't quite sure because we didn't do much prep, right? So I didn't really even know what we were going to talk about, but it turned out perfect, man. I think more podcasts should be like this.
Yeah, man. I just like to shoot from the hip, you know, keep it conversational.
Same, and then, man. I feel like preparing for things gives me anxiety, you know, like it's like, oh, we're going to talk about all these different things. And it's like, oh, it's too much.
Too scripted.
Though. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Nice. All good. Cheers, Kevin.
All right. Take it easy, Jeff.
Thanks for tuning in. And I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode. Goodbye.